Across the city and South Cambridgeshire.
Cambridge 105 Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome to Flavour. Our thanks to Ollie Slack for the last hour, and don't miss Jack Swindlehurst at 5pm for those results. The Flavour team today is Alan Alder, Rosie Aplin and myself, Matt Bentman. And here are Alan and Rosie with details of what's on today's lineup.
And today we celebrate gin, with details of lots of different types, including some new, just released ones. We've experts, ideas for cocktails, ideas for what to mix it with, ideas for cooking with it, and for that, we're joined by top Cambridge chefs Alex Rushmer, Rosie Sykes, and Tina Roche.
We also hear from Neil Mackay, who puts the Mac into Mac Daddies. He's the recent winner of the Cambridge News Street Food Pop-Up of the Year. And we visit Winter Comfort and find out how it's turning homeless people's lives around through training in food.
And as usual, we'll be having the up-to-the-minute food tweets and news of free food on the Olio app. So, let's go on to our first feature.
Gin.
Yeah, my favourite at the moment is Warner's Rhubarb.
Okay, why do you like it?
It's really, really refreshing. It's really nice.
Excellent,
yeah.
Excellent. And what about you?
Tanqueray 10.
Tanqueray 10, oh,
yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
Okay.
In this report, we speak to gin enthusiasts, people from gin distillers, and we get ideas on using gin in cocktails, we find what mixers to have with it, and we have some of Cambridge's top chefs on how to use it in cooking. But first of all, gin, a brief history.
1585. English soldiers fighting the Spanish in Holland discover that Dutch troops are given Geneva before they go into battle. The term Dutch courage is coined. An English version of Geneva, called gin, is later made. 1689 to 1697. The English government passes legislation restricting the importing of brandy and encouraging gin production. Sales of gin rise significantly. 1723. The death rate exceeds the birth rate. Excessive consumption of gin is held to be partly responsible. 1735. There are now tens of thousands of gin shops throughout the country, including more than 7,500 in London alone. 1736. The Gin Act imposes high taxes on the sale of gin. Riots in the streets result. 1751. The new Gin Act allows gin to be sold only at licensed premises. This has some success in curbing its consumption. 1826. The invention of the column still paves the way for the development of the London gin style. 2009, the first National Gin Day is announced. Henceforth, it takes place on the first Saturday of June. 2018, a poll finds that gin is the nation's favourite alcoholic drink. Exports are up 29% in 6 months.
That was Flavour Occasional Liz Budd, who is also going to read through some of the 132 gins on sale currently at Pint Shop in Pease Hill. Here's the start.
Beckett's, 40%. Juniper from Box Hill. Boodle's, 40%. Coriander.
With so many gins available, what are people's favourites? Before, we heard from Andrea and Skye visiting the Cambridge Cocktail Weekend about their favourite gins. But what do others like? Here are Jack Etherington from Pint Shop, Alex Percival, who represented Tanqueray and Gordon's at the Cocktail Weekend, Dr. John Winter Holt, who works as a cocktail designer at Cambridge Distillery, and Will Lowe, co-founder of Cambridge Distillery.
Scent. Orange, coriander, cardamom. Cotswold.
But personal favourites, we've got Little Bird, which is a London dry, but with a really grapefruity overtone. There's also some really nice new Mediterranean gins coming out of Italy. And Malfi Con Arancina, which is a Valencian orange gin.
But in all honesty, yeah, Tanqueray is my favourite gin. There's a number of expressions within in the brand, so Tanqueray 10 is kind of the absolute pinnacle in the gin world. So, yeah, that would be my go-to gin.
Now, on brand, my favourite gin is the Cambridge Seasonal Autumn Winter 2017, which is very... It's very good to drink on its own, just over ice. It's like a neat gin, not for mixing with tonic. So that's my favourite on brand. Off brand, I would say the Isle of Harris gin. I really like. It's got sugar kelp in it, so it's really interesting kind of sea notes to it, which is kind of fun. So I think that one, off brand. And the bottle's amazing too.
Dry, 44%. Spiegel, Rock Samphire, Wood Ever. Four pillars.
But what do you mix with your favourite gin to get the best out of it? Here's Jack Etherington and Alex Percival.
Herner, 40.5%. Lingonberries, Meadow Sweet, Vanilla.
I think some of the more high class, more premium tonics can make a really bad gin taste really nice, but they can make a really amazing gin taste a bit pedestrian and a bit boring. Some experts say, you know, drink it like a whiskey, drink it over ice with a couple of drops of mineral water. I quite like soda water with gin. It sort of brings out the botanicals a bit more, but it's all down to preference. I think, you know, gin and tonic works so well because I think it's pretty amazing. It's a lovely taste.
But if I was to come into a pint shop and ask and pick out a gin that interested me, somebody could advise me as to what to have with it, could they?
Oh, sure, yeah. Our bartenders generally, they might recommend something that they really like, or they might get to know your personal flavours that you prefer. So some gins work really well with bitter lemon. Slow gin works amazingly well with ginger ale, and we've got a hop gin that's made by Zumagurium, a Manchester-based distillery, and it's got licoricey and hoppy flavours to it, and that works really well with ginger beer, which gives it a sort of spicy undertone to it. But it depends what fruit or herb you match with it. You know, famously Hendrix has cucumber with it, but any citrus fruit generally works very well with gin. Pink grapefruit's amazing as well.
I think, yeah, a lot of people are a little bit confused as to why there's so many different tonics out there, but the way in which you make a gin is that you're using a huge variety of botanicals, which you can then pair with different styles of gin, tonics, such as things like the Mediterranean tonics and the aromatic tonics. So certainly different gins will lend themselves to different tonic waters.
42%, rye, matcha, lemongrass. Alchemist, 40%.
And then there's cocktails. Here, talking about their favourites, are Alex Percival, Will Lowe and G. Franklin, Global Ambassador for Luxardo.
Gin is a lot more mixable than I think people think. I think people immediately assume gin and tonic and that's all you can do, but actually there's a lot of fun you can have with gin. And if you look back through the ages, look at some of the classic cocktails, a lot of those were based with gin. So obviously the martini being probably the most famous. In more recent years, things like the Bramble, which is gin, lemon juice and blackberries and whatnot. So yeah, there's a lot of stuff you can do with gin. I have a lot of fun with it.
What would you say is probably your favourite
gin-based cocktail?
Actually, quite a standard, no-frills Tom Collins, I think, which is gin, fresh lemon juice, a little bit of sugar syrup, and soda water. And actually, we're serving it on our bar here, but using the new Tanqueray Sevilla, which is Tanqueray gin infused with Seville oranges. So, yeah, really nice blend.
At the moment, I've got a real soft spot for a Negroni. We've got a version on a Negroni here that we're using where it's garnished with sage, and we use our Cambridge dry gin in it, which has a fruit note from blackcurrant leaf. And we've just used a tiny amount of creme de cassis in the Negroni. It really brings out that fruit note. It's absolutely delicious.
Sounds perfect.
Oh, my favourite. That's a very hard question to ask. I really think it depends upon the time of the day. You know, for me, I think if I need to wake up, and I don't mean in the morning, just, you know, generally if I'm feeling a little bit sleepy, something with a high acidity would be really, really good. Something like an Aviation. So an Aviation is usually you'd use London Dry Gin, Luxardo Maraschino. You'd use a little bit of creme de violette liqueur and some lemon juice as well. And it's really quite tart and, like, you know, it's like a refreshing slap in the face to kind of wake you up.
Sounds fun. Yeah. Sounds fun. Excellent.
Gin Mar, 42.7%. Mandarin, rosemary, olive.
But what about gin with food? First of all, as an accompaniment.
I mean, just last night we had a restaurant pairing going where the courses were matched with various gins from our portfolio. Through to the other end, we've done tailoring events whereby we create gins specifically for certain restaurants. So we work with Midsummer House, for example, and we create a gin for them using the botanicals from within their walled garden that's really expressive of the area that they're cooking in. Right through to a pop-up session that we did with Alex Rushmer and Lawrence Butler just in the summer, and that was a seven-course tasting menu where every one of the courses was inspired by the botanicals in one of our gins, and then we did a drinks pairing menu with that as well, each one of which was inspired by the dishes that they'd created. So a full circular referencing point. It made an excellent, fully combined food and drink experience.
Almond. Malfi Originale, Italian gin, 41%. Juniper.
And Dr. John Winter-Holt and Will Lowe talk about cooking with gin.
I've had a really good gin donut, which was, yeah, it was really bitter and amazing. Really enjoyed that. I suppose, yeah, juniper flavouring is good, though, as well. So, like something with veal or some kind of roasted meat with juniper flavour, that would be good. But, yeah, I can't say I've tried it that much.
We always have juniper at the core of all of our gins. That's, yeah, we're very traditional in that respect, very innovative in others. And juniper as a food isn't wonderful. It's not something you'd like to eat, but the oils in it have tremendous properties. They're great for curing things. So gin-cured salmon, for example, is absolutely to die for. But I have to say my highlight from Alex and Lawrence's pop-up in the summer, they did a dessert based on our truffle gin, where they made a truffle gin truffle.
Oh, it was sounds good.
It was decadent beyond belief. It was an absolute winner.
Classic 43%, saffron, nutmeg, cloves. Pinkster, 37%.
But let's leave the final word on cooking with gin to Andrea and Skye, who we started with.
I've made fudge and a cheesecake. Gin fudge, yes. Yeah.
What was your flavour of the cheesecake?
That was rhubarb and ginger.
Nice. Mm. Really, really nice.
Yeah, that was really, really good.
Wow. So tell me a bit more how you make it.
It's a lot of Philadelphia cheese, a lot of gelatin, and it's just whisk it all up, stick it in the fridge, and then just eat it. It's okay. Really, really easy.
But don't forget to wear the gin.
That's a good point, yes, yeah. Yeah.
St. George Terroir Gin, 45%. Bay, sage, Oregon pine.
And finally, let's hear from G. Franklin of Luxardo about their new gin.
Usually we'd be making liqueurs. However, we recently unearthed an old recipe for a London dry gin. And so we've just released that. We've also released something very exciting, which is our sour cherry gin as well. Basically, the Luxardo family, we've been cultivating cherries for nearly 200 years. We started in 1821. We now have over 30,000 cherry trees. So, you know, cherry is kind of like the heart and soul of our company. And our gin is pretty damn fantastic, but we're adding a tiny bit of our soul into it as well. So at the moment, it's available exclusively through 31dover.com, which is a drinks website. It'll be exclusive to them for, I think, a month. And then it will be in other markets, obviously, as well.
Columbia Orodoxy Aged Gin, 43%. Rum barrel aged gin.
Somebody give me some gin.
Oh, so do I. Thanks to everybody who was involved in that, and Sue Bailey, who did a lot of the interviews. And the music, in case you were wondering, was Gin House Blues by Amen Corner. Not the most obvious version, but I think it fitted the bill very well.
It certainly did. And usually we have our what's-ons all together at the end of the programme, but today we're going to feature the gin-related ones right here instead. So, we start with Cambridge Wine Merchants in Cherry Hinton Road, and they have their gin club on the first Tuesday of each month. So, this This coming Tuesday, there are 5 new gins to try, and you can book on Cambridge 214 553, or you can go to the Eventbrite website. It costs £15.
On the 8th of September, Vera's Gin Club will be happening at the Plough in Shepworth. They'll be focusing on the 5 flavour profiles of gin, with nibbles to match each one. It's £22 for a ticket, and it's on Eventbrite.
And on the 14th to the 16th of September, at the Little Rose in Haslingfield, there is a beer and gin festival. And that's with 20 gins, 10 beers and 4 ciders. There's also food and live music, and no need to book.
And in case you didn't know, at the Royal Cambridge Hotel in Trumpington Street, there is a gin bar. The gin menu is on their website, and their gin of the month is Blackwood's Vintage Dry. Either of you into gin?
I'm very into gin, yeah. I'm much more so, having heard all this about these delicious gins.
Very
real hankering now, yeah. I love a Hendrix, personally. It's the refreshing cucumber. When you put that, and they have that slice of cucumber in it with the tonic, so crisp and refreshing. Love that.
Right. Well, one of my daughters won't be Warner's Rhubarb Gin, which one of the interviewees mentioned, and that is absolutely... you can't go wrong with rhubarb, I don't think.
Yeah, it sounds like a nice autumnal gin.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So... I think I'm going to start hitting the gin much harder.
Now, coming up later in the programme, we will be following up the idea of cooking with gin, and we'll get some suggestions from Cambridge chefs Alex Rushmer, Rosie Sykes and Tina Rush.
The Cambridge News Food and Drink Awards were given out recently, and the winner of the street food pop-up was Mac Daddy from Cambridge Market. Sue Bailey went along to talk to the Big Daddy himself, Neil Mackay.
Basically, it's a mac and cheese stand on Cambridge Market, all on a cargo bike, which I built myself. All we do is mac and cheese, because of quite a limited of space. But, yeah, all good. All my pots are organic, compostable. I'm on a cargo bike, so there's no carbon footprint with, the vehicle. Very Cambridge. Been a bicycle.
And right in the side of the market?
On the side of the market, yep. 7 days a week on the market.
And what are the dishes that you do?
We do plain mac, which is mac and cheese. We do one with chorizo. That is the only meat on the menu. The rest are all vegetarian, or cheese is vegetarian. We do one with pesto, which is vegetarian as well. We even do a vegan one, which is a different bechamel sauce made with Violife cheese and coconut milk.
And you were just saying you do a sweet mac and cheese?
Yes, one with sweet onion chutney, which is the kind of thing you'd find on a cheese board.
Oh, that sounds really...
It goes nice with some coriander and crispy onions as well, believe it or not.
But why mac and cheese? What brought you into this whole thing?
Because my mac and cheese is brilliant. Simple as that. And my girlfriend has always said, for years, she said, you've got to do it, you've got to do your mac and cheese, you've got to do something with food. February last year, I just thought, let's see if it'll fit on a bike. So I did a few drawings, and it would all go on a bike. I thought, let's do a little mock-up. Did a mock-up, it all seemed to fit on a bike, so off we went. Built the bike. Here we are.
And so in front of your bike, you've got your whole stand, haven't you?
Yes, the bike is the front of house. It's the stand, so I have banner work behind. But yeah, everything goes onto the bike. I have a little trailer for the gas bottle and the fridge. Couldn't quite squeeze that in, but I've managed to get a bain-marie, a gas hob, all the equipment you need for a kitchen. And it's even got the kitchen sink on it.
Oh, my God, no, really? Where's it
in? Or a hand wash.
Oh, fair enough.
Yeah, so it's a kitchen sink.
Okay, excellent. Oh, that's brilliant. So have you been doing food before?
I've worked in a commercial kitchen a few years back now, for about 4 months, so nothing major. But I was doing online sales, had my own business. I'm basically just commuting back to Birmingham, because I've lived in Cambridge 4 years now from the Midlands, and commuting backwards, forwards, sitting on the M25. And it was kind of the Dartford crossing at about 7 o'clock on an evening, sitting in a 2-hour queue thinking, this isn't the way forward. So yeah. I thought, if we can get space on the market, do some food. The girlfriend was behind me on it, so yeah.
Good. Fantastic.
Yeah.
Is it difficult to get space on the market?
The spaces, weekend pitches are premium, so you struggle. But there's places available in the week. They're really helpful as well, the council. The guys at the market, they'll help you out. Obviously, you've got to get your food hygiene, all that. So, yeah, there's little things to do, but they help you. It's not a no, they'll advise you. Yeah, all good. All good. I managed to get a 5-star hygiene rating as well, which,
That is impressive.
Yes, on a bicycle.
Yes, on a bike.
So, yeah, all good. So, it's been really helpful on the market, and down at, obviously, the food hygiene as well. Yeah. So,
good. Who are your main customers coming past?
A little bit of everything. The American tourists obviously love mac and cheese. Students love mac and cheese because it's a good-sized portion for them. The Chinese tourists aren't that keen on, I found, dairy cheese. So maybe not that side. But Indian tourists like it. Students, exchange students, you know, Canadian, South American, they like it. Families. It's a varied market. But we do loyalty cards as well, so we know who comes back. So we do have regulars as well. And there's also a girl who has a mac and cheese budget that comes down the stand, which I found out, which I thought was so cute.
A mac and cheese budget?
A mac and cheese budget.
Nice. That's her special treat.
Yes, that's it. So, yeah, it's good. Bit of everything, really. Yeah. Everyone.
And what times are you there from until?
I'm ready for about 11, and most days I do sell out because obviously I'm on a bike and only once my bechamel is gone, it's gone. I'm sold out. So, till about 3-ish. So, you know, 7 days a week. You know, keeps me busy. And we also do events. We do, you know, little gigs outside restaurants and pubs and things like that. And, you know, we've done Strawberry Fair, Strawberries and Cream Festival. We did a May Ball. Do 700 portions off the bike. May Ball. So, not too bad. The girlfriend was, bless her, helping me.
So, how long have you been going for?
It's February. So, the day I came down was Beast from the East. It was minus six. And I came down, there was me and two other traders on the whole market. And I just thought, is the market open? I thought I'd got a day wrong or something. Yeah, I thought, is the market not open today? But yeah, it's because of the weather. But yes, still have customers on the first day.
So plans for the future?
Expand. I'll probably do another bike later on in the year, you know, once get the summer out of the way. We've bought a nice 3-metre gazebo for events. So next year, get more into events. But obviously, I want to keep the bike on the market as well, because where I started. So, yeah, expand.
And if people want to follow you?
We're on Instagram, we're on Facebook, you name it, we're on it.
Oh, well done.
Yeah, you've got the website as well, themacdaddy.co.uk. But Instagram's the best bet, because everyone loves a food picture on Instagram.
Oh, they do, and it's the MacDaddy underscore UK.
Yeah, that's it.
Excellent.
So. But yeah, we're on TripAdvisor, on Google, we're on the platforms I didn't even know existed. We're on Foursquare, everything. So, now, do you want some food?
Oh, yes, please.
You have to come.
Oh, what a lovely story. Very unsurprising. Neil Mackay there of Mac Daddy at Cambridge Market.
Let's get the first of our ideas for cooking with gin now. Here is Alex Rushmer, ex-Hole in the Wall, and who did a very well-received series of gin-related pop-ups at the Cambridge Distillery showroom in Grantchester recently.
Gin's a lovely ingredient to cook with. It's one of those things that has so many aromatic qualities, and depending on the gin you use, you can pull out different flavours all across the board. If I was cooking with gin, I think I would use its sort of slightly acidic qualities and those top notes and that sort of piney nature that juniper brings to the party. But I mean, a classic would be a cured trout dish or salmon. At the moment, I've always used, for the last 3 or 4 years, I've used trout, which is a little bit more local, a little bit more sustainable than farmed salmon. But a very simple sort of Swedish style gravlax. My mum's Swedish, so I sort of grew up eating an awful lot of cured fish. And salmon and trout is particularly good. That sort of slightly oily quality. So if you make a cure with equal parts salt and sugar, and then any of the aromatic ingredients that are in the gin that you're using, so juniper or dill or cucumber, and then a splash of gin as well. Use that to make your cure. Rub that over the salmon. Then it's one of the easiest recipes in the world. You pop it in the fridge for 2 or 3 days, rinse it off, let it dry out a little bit, and you should have something that is equally good at breakfast, lunch or dinner.
Oh, right. That sounds fantastic. Do you have to wrap it up in anything?
It's a good idea to just cover it in cling film or tinfoil or something like that, just to stop the outside drying out. And if you want to turn it every 12 hours or so, just to make sure that the cure is even all the way through, that's a good idea.
Right. What if you leave it for too long? Does it come to any harm?
If you think about what happens to cod, if you think about what happens to salt cod when it's over cured, I mean, it's a preservative method that was created who knows how many thousands of years ago to make fresh food last longer before the age of refrigeration. So over curing it, you can negate that effect of it being inevitably becoming too salty just by soaking it out. So if you do over cure it, then there is a solution, but you'll end up with a different product that might be better as an ingredient in fish cakes or something.
That was the very impressive Alex Rushmer. Alex will be with us regularly in future programmes with ideas for particular ingredients, and our other Cambridge chefs, who we'll hear from in a moment, will be doing the same.
Everyone knows that music, don't they? It's Rockin' Robin, and that music signals the time for the latest food tweets from the city.
Yeah, Calverley's in Hooper Street have tweeted to say that Reggae Kitchen is serving food there from now. Alan Mentum has tweeted to say they've got a couple of tables left this evening and also at lunch tomorrow. To book, phone Cambridge 413-000 or book online. Brewboard in Harston apologises for the late notice, but the tap room will not be open today. Geldart Kitchen is closed at lunchtime today, but will be open again this evening at 6 o'clock. And Azahar Food Van is at the Ancient Oak Medieval Fair at Stoke-on Quay today.
Now, I visited Food for Food recently. They are a local catering service, but with a difference. They do buffets, they do afternoon tea delivery to your door, they do family picnics. All of these are fresh, all of these are to order. And they are a charity owned by Winter Comfort. I started off by speaking with Food for Food manager Rachel Newell, and things quickly developed from there.
In the last financial year, we served 7,737 buffets.
That is an incredible thing to get out by the time they want it.
We need a calculator.
We've kind of grown through word of mouth. I mean, we do a really good spread.
Really top quality stuff.
I think it's our busiest year so far for Food for Food.
Food for Food.
Food for Food. A catering business run by Winter Comfort.
OK, so I'm Liam Hares.
Liam's a catering supervisor.
He knows his staff.
I love the buffet. I
don't know, I just do them.
The sandwiches are simply divine.
Tuna, salmon, coronation chicken.
Brie and cranberry.
Vegetarian selection, falafel.
Oh, roasted vegetable. Absolutely delicious.
Sandwiches, cakes, fruit.
It's a wonderful place to work.
I thought I was only going to be here for a few months.
How long ago was that?
That was five years ago, yeah.
All that meat and no potatoes just ain't right, like green tomatoes.
I don't know how long we've been doing this Food for Food.
Food for Food has been around since 2009.
But it seems to get bigger and bigger and bigger, you know.
We're a professional catering company with the added social value in that we train and employ those with experience of homelessness. And we aim to move them back into society as productive members.
So get people going again, you know, get people on the right track.
Hi, my name is Leon. I found myself a job as a chef in Brown's restaurant.
We invest really heavily in staff training.
It's all thanks to Winter Comfort, who have supported me all this time. They found accommodation for me, got me food vouchers, introduced me to Food for Food here, which is brilliant.
I didn't know none of this existed in Cambridge. You wouldn't have thought that in a million years.
I always believe that there's no such thing as a free lunch. I've taken from them, so I feel it's time for me to give back.
We're a University of Cambridge preferred supplier. Until recently, the last few years we have been. It's just extremely busy. Once the buffets are out, then we're either helping service users cook hot lunch or making sandwiches. And the kitchen closes down about 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Up till then, it's full on busy.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, obviously, it's an enterprise that they've set up to help homeless people.
They're learning how to cook. They're learning about food hygiene here at Winter Comfort.
Yeah, there's always something to do, you know. I'm here at about 6:15 in the morning. I prepare all the breakfast, lay all the breakfast out. You know, I've been doing it about 7 years now, so it's just an old hat, you know. I just don't even think what I'm doing, I just do it. Yeah.
Keep on eating, baby, till you get on now.
With a kitchen and a food business, you've got to meet food hygiene standards.
Everybody does level 2 to work here, and then we push people on to do level 3. And we've had staff even do level 4.
I was actually the delivery driver last year for Food for Food. So you get that easy route into work, because obviously they're going to be a bit kinder to you. And then you raise yourself up, and maybe 3-4 months later, you've got the confidence maybe to move on into, you know, the proper world. But also, they have contacts with the proper world. Like, for instance, I work at St. John's College because of Winter Comfort. So, it's all good stuff. Blue Arrow Agency was coming in there last year to try to help homeless people. They've got in touch with the colleges. They've got this catering business, like Food for Food, that what you're saying, they train you up. It's a great way of building yourself up and being all right.
This is a perfect job for me because it's balancing those social and financial aims. You know, you need to be sustainable, you need to make money. We're totally owned by the charity, so any money goes back into the charity. So Winter Comfort's been around, goodness, it's over 25 years now. It was a blue bus that served soup in the winter, hence the name, and it registered as a charity in 1991. Food for Food has been around since 2009. Then the aim was to think about these a bit more businesslike and think of, have a pricing strategy and a marketing strategy.
It seems to have a smart system going.
Hello, my name's Teresa and I'm the kitchen assistant at Winter Comfort for Food for Food.
Hi, I'm Aidy. I'm the breakfast chef.
Teresa's the chatty one.
I've just started 6 months ago.
Oh, okay.
So I'm a newcomer.
Noisy newcomer.
Are you always a newcomer?
Yeah, really good team and they all support each other.
I mean, we all get on very well in the kitchen because there's always banter going on, you know, there's always, she's always laughing, we're always laughing. It's just a nice friendly place to go and the food's good.
Yeah, the food's.
Oh, Tesco's are here.
All good.
Morning.
Morning.
How are we doing, all right? Oh, the adrenaline going this morning, I'll tell you, I've got a big load today.
Yeah, so we get small things from Tesco, and then the main bulk of it we get from breaks, like a cash and carry, and the fair share food, and then some people donate food, which is quite nice, you get nice treats when they're donated for them.
One such donor is Ben Aveling of the Radmore Farm Shop, and his voice is no stranger to the Flavour programme.
As it's a local charity, something we really believe in and we're so close, we thought it would be really good if we could help in some way, and we thought, what better than a Radmore breakfast?
And Marks and Spencer's send in lovely cakes. So they're all happy on a Thursday. Cake day.
Thank you. Cheers, guys.
Thanks, Frank. Andrew.
Have a banana, Hannah. Try the salami, Tommy.
This is exactly what I need. Thanks to this place, I can say that being homeless on the streets, I've actually started to gain weight.
I'm Raymond Leslie Slater. I hail from the city of Everton, and I am a rough sleeping wayfarer. Whenever I'm in Cambridge, I come here every day, to tell you the truth, because I've got no income coming in, I don't claim benefits, I don't ham and egg, and I generally get my everyday needs here. You get a nice breakfast Monday to Friday.
You got your tea? Do you want your tea?
The endless cups of tea. There's endless cups. Hand washed and sterilised.
Everybody eats when they come to my house.
When we first started making sandwich buffets, you know, it just seemed a natural development to what we do. We feed people, but it's more than that, you know, it's sitting down, eating, talking. It's a good way of starting a conversation with someone.
Yes, I like Winter Comfort.
My name's Alison Nolan and I'm project worker here.
It's a very nice place. They help people.
And if people want to get back into work, it's a massive jump. And people might have a period of time when they've got no work experience, so they've got a gap in their CV, they might not have references. So all of those things can be helped by working for us.
Like Pete at the moment is being trained up in chefing. I think his first week.
Right. He's doing it and you have an apprenticeship here as well.
Do you get involved in the cooking side as well?
Just started today, funny enough. Oh, yeah, with Trevor next week. So he had shown me the ropes with the cooking.
So the rest of staff here, you get on well?
Yeah, brilliant. Yeah. It's never had a problem. It's out there.
Sing for your supper and you'll get breakfast. Songbirds always eat if their song is sweet to hear.
Food's delicious.
It's a big filling breakfast.
Mushrooms and roast tomatoes.
The last 2 days I've had soup, chicken, they've had hot dogs, hamburgers.
No, eggy bread.
Eggy bread?
Eggy bread.
For their elevensies and then their lunch. So they're fed well.
I mean, I started doing things because I was homeless once and the comfort helped me. So payback.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, it's just something I enjoy doing. That's why I'm here in the mornings, you know.
When I first came here, I wanted this feature to be purely about Food for Food, the social enterprise, but it's very clear that everything is tightly integrated. So that's Food for Food, Winter Comfort.
Well, it has been brilliant, and it's been really great for the guys and for us. I think because of the emphasis we put on the work skills, it's made a real big difference.
You know, it's nice to do something with a bit of a social conscience behind it. You know, it's not a profit-making business. We're not doing it for profit, you know. We're doing it to benefit the homeless community in Cambridge.
It's what I've gone through and I've learnt a lot. It's not that I'm just plugging Winter Comfort or Food for Food. It's what they really do put on here, which is an excellent, excellent service. You cannot fault it at all.
It's never boring. It's always interesting. 15 years later, I still look forward to coming to work. So,
and I'm feel an honour to be part of here and to have experienced, you know, from Winter Comfort and how much I've learned through food as well.
In my heart, I feel one thing. These people, these are so very good, so very good. This is as a charity help, yeah? They can help. It's very big respect from me for them.
You know, as I made that feature, I realised how Winter Comfort and Food for Food, they cross over. And it didn't seem right to make a feature on one without including the other. So a big thanks to everybody who took the time out to speak with me.
And Winter Comfort has just been shortlisted in this year's Social Enterprise Awards, highlighting the effect their Food for Food business has had on changing people's lives.
And one thing not mentioned in that feature is that they are restarting their monthly cafe at St Andrew's Hall in Chesterton on the 18th of September. A different theme every time. Previous monthly cafes were based around Chinese New Year and St Patrick's Day, among others.
For this next one, the theme will be autumn, featuring pumpkin soup, pancetta, broccoli and pine nut risotto, butternut squash and sage risotto, and pear and blackberry crumble.
And you can find out about that and plenty more by following Food for Food on Twitter at food4foodcams, the four is the number four. Their website is foodforfood.org.uk, and there you can see their full menu and place all the orders you want. And Winter Comfort's Twitter handle is at WinterComfort20.
And now we're going back to cooking with gin. Here's Tina Roche from Cambridge Cookery and Bistro.
I think gin is a really lovely alcohol, and I know there's a real gin craze at the moment, but as a cook, you know, it's a nice spirit to use because it is so botanical, and I think it has a real affinity with autumn cooking as well. So it goes well with apples, it goes well with elderberries, and of course lime and, you know, lemon is perhaps a slightly more summery pairing, but you know, we like to make a gin jelly, for instance. It would be really nice to have that with autumn berries. We've been into throughout the summer when it's been hot making our own ice lollies for our Saturday night bistro. You know, we like the idea both of having a Prosecco or Prosecco and gin. So I think, you know, it has a lot of culinary uses other than just having it with tonic.
Tell me about gin jellies then. I mean, how much gin would you add to your jelly?
Well, obviously as much as possible. There is a point where it's difficult to set anything gelatine-based when you have an awful lot of alcohol in, so it takes much, much longer. So it's probably one of those projects you would have to take on rather wholeheartedly at home and experiment until you get to the exact right ratios of gin to gelatine.
Right, a certain pleasure involved.
Absolutely,
there, I think.
Yes.
And a reminder that if you download the Olio app, O-L-I-O, you get information about free food available in Cambridge and South Cambridgeshire. There's a lot during the week, less at weekends, but it's a really good place to go if you want to prevent food waste, and you can post your own excess food on there as well.
And it's time for our final look at some ideas for cooking with gin now. So we're going over to Cambridge-based writer and chef, Rosie Sykes.
Yes, kind of. I mean, I do personally think that the best thing to do with gin is have it in a gin and tonic, but I have used it in the past in marinades. So because gin has a lovely flavour profile of lots of different aromats. I think it's quite a nice way to use some of those aromats. So, for example, even almost you could use it to make a ceviche type thing with lemongrass, chilli, those kind of flavours, coriander seed, things like that, and just add the gin to the lime juice to sort of cook some fish for a light start or something would be very nice. But I also think quite nice to use with something like game to make a marinade, not a huge amount because obviously the gin itself is a very strong flavour, but to kind of, if you think about the flavours within the gin, like juniper is lovely with game, like I said before, lemongrass is a very nice sort of subtlety that you might find in gin. Lemon thyme, although not in gin, is similar flavour profiles. So sort of make a good mixture of those kind of things, and it's a nice way to tenderise some game, to cook it quickly on the grill or something like that.
How long would you tenderise it for?
I find that if you're going to marinate something, give it a good at least 5 hours, but if not overnight, works really, really well. Mm.
And when you're using it with fish, is it suitable with all fish or would it overpower some? Some fish are quite delicate,
yeah,
aren't
they? Yeah, I agree that they are, which is why I think just a really little splash, but an oilier fish probably it would work best with to, yeah, kind of do that cooking thing. Mm. And even in a brine, actually, a good splash of gin could be nice. I over the summer, we got given some wild boar and we made a brine, and I put cider in that brine, but you could use, like I said before, the similar flavour profiles and use gin as your flavouring.
Mm, I wish somebody would give me a wild boar. so many ideas for cooking with gin. Anyway, thanks to Rosie Sykes. And as we said before, we'll be welcoming our Cambridge chefs back on next time to continue our series of ideas for ingredients. Anybody, do you cook with gin ever? Or do you just drink it?
The only time I get... Well, I mean, it's always great for a pre-meal drink, isn't it? But I've used the sort of leftover dregs of some sloe gin before in a gravy, and that's worked quite nicely. Ooh. Because it's sort of got that sweetness and that sugary, yeah, and it can give it a bit of a pep to a gravy, so that works quite well.
Oh, that sounds good. Yeah, I've done the salmon cure with gin, which is jolly nice. I was going to bring some in, actually, to share, but I ate it.
Oh,
but the other thing that I made, which was I really, really liked, was plums in a sort of gin sauce. It's a Nigel Slater recipe, and it just, gin and plums just go incredibly well together, which you might not expect, but they do.
Sounds good.
Now, earlier in the week, Alan met up with Dave Fox of Trumpington Allotments in a polytunnel. Alan asked him what the advantages were of growing fruit and veg in a polytunnel or a greenhouse.
In this environment, we can get crops earlier than outside, and we can also get crops later than outside, and we might even be able to grow larger or get a more numerous number of tomatoes, and we can also extend the variety of vegetables we grow.
So what's growing in here that wouldn't normally grow outside?
Well, I mean, you can try aubergines outside, and actually this summer is one where aubergines on the outdoor plot may well have done quite well. However, they're pretty guaranteed crop here inside the polytunnel. So I've had three good ones off these two plants, and there's one good one on there and a couple more coming. So as long as I keep watering and feeding them, there they are, there's two good ones on there and a baby on the next plant. So as long as I keep feeding them, look after them, they'll give us a few more fruits. What else can we grow? So my neighbour's got melons. So yeah, so outside you'd have to try pretty hard to grow melons in most years. Chilies do especially well here in the polytunnel, and tomatoes. I mean, they have so much space here to roam. The roof height is a good 3.5 metres in here, and so we construct supports and hang strings from the frame of the tunnel in order to allow the tomatoes to grow up, and they'll grow up across and back down again, keep going, because it's a vine, and they do extremely well. You have to keep looking after them, you have to feed them an awful lot. Here in the polytunnel at Trumpington Allotments, we only grow in containers, not in the ground, and so therefore the same rules for container gardening apply as outside.
and, you know, for nutrients, the plant's only got what you give it in that little box, so you've got to keep feeding it. And actually, over the course of a season of tomatoes, if we go back to my plot, I can show you this. And the level of compost in the container will decrease over the season. And so I keep a bag of compost here. And then just use some of this fresh compost. And I've just done that with this bed, just to top up the compost in the plot, in the box that the tomatoes are growing in. Just to increase the volume. The tomatoes try to make little roots at the base of their stem. You can see those here. So it's good to give something for a few of those to grow into, and also to just add some mass and more nutrients in the compost, and to hold in the moisture that's already in there. So you have to look after them. It's a long growing season for tomatoes. We start them off, put the seedlings out in April, and we can still be cropping tomatoes maybe into December if we're lucky.
And the flavour is every bit as good as it is outside, I suppose.
Superb, absolutely, yeah. And of course, there are some varieties of tomato which are recommended only for indoor growing. So, again, there's a greater variety that you can choose from. These are called Shirley, and that's a variety which doesn't necessarily do brilliantly outside, but they're superb in here. And these are show quality. I mean, that's nice and spherical. If I can find four more exactly like that, then I can enter them in the class of five tomatoes on a plate.
Right, you won't be surprised to know it's the flavour that we're particularly interested in.
Well, on flavour, of course, yeah. Well, last year, most of my entries, I found, indeed all the other entries, they were cut. And it should be no surprise, because of course the judge is looking for flavour as well as the other attributes. So, good appearance, uniformity, varietal characteristics and so on. Yeah, but everything that was ready for eating raw, he had a taste of. And so, yeah, I mean, I got a prize for my carrots, which actually didn't look nearly as good as some of the others, but they tasted good, apparently. Yeah. So, here you go.
Any disadvantages from gardening indoors?
Yeah, I can think of two main disadvantages. The first is disease, or pests and diseases, but pests are, to some extent, manageable. So, for example, I find slug traps very effective in here. But disease, and especially fungal diseases, so the moulds, they really take hold in here, because, as you can feel, it's...
Because of the...
I wish you could do this on radio.
It's
warm, it's damp, and the doors are... It's not a brilliantly sunny day here, so we have the doors open, but only slightly ajar, and so it's a very humid environment, and so diseases such as the late blight and the botrytis and the grey moulds, they do tend to take hold very quickly. So the other major disadvantage to growing indoors is, of course, expense, because to cover an area, be it with a glass house or a polytunnel, is obviously very expensive. Now, polytunnels are much cheaper per square metre, especially when you get large. So, you know, polytunnel growing has sort of exploded over the last 50, 40 years.
But what about things like green fly? Once you've got a green fly in here, it must be difficult to get rid of.
Well, I think so. That I don't find green fly particularly a problem in here, but I think that as it's an indoor environment, the chances are that biological controls would be effective where they wouldn't be outside. And I haven't used these personally. One or two others have tried them, but because the everything's contained within the within the structure, maybe that's worth doing. But there's no biological control against fungal diseases, unfortunately.
Okay. And the other issue must be watering, because presumably it needs, especially in the sort of summer we've had, it must need very frequent watering.
You need to water almost every day in the polytunnel. And during the winter, you can skip it, especially when there's not been any bright sunlight leading to much evaporation. But, you need to visit every day. But then you need to visit almost every day to harvest. So it's incredibly productive.
And this is an enormous pepper plant.
Yes, I know. So this... is pepper long red Marconi, which was started off on my kitchen windowsill as a seedling, and then it then spent about 6 weeks growing here in the polytunnel as a seedling, and then I planted it out on my patio, and then we had the amazing summer of 2018, and it's got really tall, and there's a good 10 dozen fruits on it already, and I've had several. I've got three more red ones, so this is the largest, most successful pepper plant I've ever grown.
And now, as it starts to decline a little, I'm bringing it back indoors again. It's going to have a space in the polytunnel and will hopefully continue to produce fruit, ripe fruit that's ripening, because of course the ethylene gas that the ripening fruits give off help the next ones to ripen, and that will be more successful within the polytunnel. And also grateful that in the polytunnel it will be protected from extremes of weather, so heavy rain and especially winds. And I'm just hoping I'll get four good ones out of this to put into the produce show. So let's just lift it. And I brought it over here in the wheelbarrow with your help, thank you. And now it's just going to be lifted into position. So it's a bit big, but there we go. Here we go. Okay, and then a fresh cane to get it upright again. Lovely, and I haven't actually lost any fruits, which was my worst fear. Thank you. And outside, one other thing that I've got going on. So these are my strawberry boxes, which gave a really good crop of strawberries in early May this year. So early to mid-May, I was picking strawberries in here. So the regime with strawberries is that we leave them outside from June until January or February, and then give them a good feed, lots of leaf mould, which strawberries love, and then take them inside to start warming up and start producing an early crop. But the reason we leave them outside is that they need that chill, that dormancy period. But having cropped quite intensively, this box is now finished. That's had two seasons of indoor cropping. And so with this one, I'm going to remove the strawberry plants. This is one of the jobs for today. Take out the old strawberries, and in there I will sow carrot. And the carrot will germinate outside. And then whilst, if I left them outside, that would be a very marginal, may not last through the winter. Pests, diseases, weather, we'll all have a chance to get at it. But indoors, got a good chance of an excellent crop of carrots. But I won't move them in until maybe end of September.
Right, okay, thanks very much, Dave. Thanks.
No problem, it's a pleasure.
And that was Dave Fox from Chumpington Allotments.
And that was Booker T and the MGs with Green Onions, signalling the start of our news section. And we begin as usual with jobs.
Urban Larder is looking for full or part-time staff able to work weekends and weekdays between 20 to 40 hours per week. Experience is useful, but not essential. And they're happy to take you on if you're on a gap year, ahead of your travels. Send your CV to Loz, and the address is contact@urban-larder.coffee, or pop in for a chat.
Cambridge Sustainable Food needs volunteers for one or more of a series of events they're running. Details are on their website, but the first two are at Maddingley Hall on the 15th of September and at Milton Country Park on the 23rd of September. These will be promoting their Veg Cities campaign. Volunteers are needed to help them spread the word about the benefits of eating, growing and cooking with more veg, using games, activities and speaking to the public. Volunteers are needed in two shifts between 9 a.m. and 4 p.m. Check out the website for more information and details of how to apply.
The Indigo Cafe has a full-time vacancy. You must be prepared to work on a Saturday or a Sunday, and you can pick up an application form at the counter. They are in St. Edward's Passage.
Newly opened on Mill Road at the junction with Covent Garden is Five Blends Coffee House. They sell Mocharabia Coffee, a big Italian company that's a rival to Illy.
Big news of a big brunch from Joe Krajinska of Afternoon Teas. There'll be sofas, daybeds, the Sunday papers, a three-course brunch, a welcoming drink, entertainment. It's on the 7th of October from 12 noon until 5 p.m. Tickets for adults are £35 with special prices for children. And it's all happening at the Great Barn at Manor Farm in Bourne. Tickets are selling rapidly, so get in quick if you want one. Go to the Afternoon Teas website for details and booking.
On the 8th of September at the Plough in Shepworth, there is a wine tasting day, and you're invited to help the Plough choose its autumn wine list from a shortlist of 30. Tickets are £13.52 from Eventbrite, and that will get you 10 75 centilitre glasses of wine, various discounts on further glasses and bottles to take away, and also a selection of tapas-style nibbles.
On the 15th and 16th of September on Parker's Peace, it's the Cambridge Food, Garden and Produce Show. From 10 till 5 and free to enter. It's definitely worth going along to. They've got a lot of well-known chefs there, and maybe Dave Fox will win a prize for his produce.
And on Saturday the 15th of September, Thirsty are hosting a one-day beer garden at St Andrew's Church in Cherry Hinton. They will be accompanied by Honest Burger and the Cambridge Film Festival, along with a comedy show and other activities. So that's taking place between 3 to 11pm, and it also is free to all.
The Cambridge Gin Distillery owns and operates a gin lab. It's in Green Street and it hosts regular gin events. There's a one-hour tasting daily at 3pm, or you can taste your way through the history of gin on Fridays at 7pm. There's also an interactive tasting menu of molecular mixology on Saturdays at 7pm, and you can create your own gin on Saturdays at 6 and Sundays at noon. Go to the Cambridge Gin Lab website for more details and for booking.
And that's all we have time for today. If you missed some, or you just want to hear the whole thing all over again, remember, we're on alternative Saturdays at 1pm, repeated at Sunday at 2pm, and then podcast early in the next week.
And if you'd like to get in contact with us for any news or comment when we are off air, you can email us flavour@cambridge105.co.uk, or you can contact us on Twitter at flavour105. And coming up on Cambridge 105 Radio this afternoon, it's the Eclectic Light Show with Mandy Morton and Nicola Upson. Mandy's talking with Gretchen Peters, the Nashville star, whilst Nicola catches up with British folk singer Eliza Carthy. Polish Waves follows at 5pm. This is the show that brings Polish culture closer to Cambridge, featuring news and entertainment half in English, half in Polish. From the Terraces takes to the airwaves from 6 till 9 this evening, with Tim Armitage and the crew bringing you the latest from Cambridge United, Cambridge City and Histon Town. Then John Hammond is here at 7 with the Big Band Show, and Jackie Bond is on after him at 8 with Let the Good Times Roll, featuring the best in rock and roll from the 50s through to today. Rebel Arts Radio is at 9 o'clock, Pete Monahan, Mark Evans and Johnny Cabbage bringing you an eclectic mix of music, politics, art, discussion and debate. And then Stagger is on at 10, an alternative music show with rap, electronica, experimental and indie tracks, presented by Tom Taylor, David Cunnington and Ian Shaw. And then Bookmark rounds off our evening at 11, presented by Lee Chambers. So there you go, a full schedule of radio entertainment right through your Sunday.
But that's all from us. We'll be back on the 15th of September. Until then,
goodbye.